welcome back to KETR's Locker Room. This is a special Thursday edition because we've got Good Friday coming up and a few of us have to go home to see the parents that we haven't seen all semester. I'm Cooper Welch and my co-host with me this week, of course, Taylor Phelps and Ryan Billups. All right, folks, this week we're going to, of course, talk the heat streak being over. We're going to talk a very controversial topic. Should the shot clock be reduced in college basketball? We'll talk a little Mavs basketball, and then we'll talk the odds to win it all for the Cowboys. All right, guys, first, let's start it off. The heat streak is over as of last night.
Yeah, pretty crazy. They lose it after 27 games. They lost to the Chicago Bulls last night, what, by 5 points, guys?
Four, I think.
4 points.
197-101.
It was a really, really physical game. Mm-hmm. LeBron James came out after the game, was pretty upset about some of the hard fouls that were issued, or that the Chicago Bulls put on them. So, man, I can absolutely not wait until those two guys square off in the playoffs.
Well, that'll be great.
It is going to be a great physical series. And maybe they can get Joakim Noah back. They can get Derrick Rose back. That would be a pretty fun series to watch.
I think the Bulls used a lot of the approach of the Bad Boy Pistons did with Jordan in the 90s of fouling him hard, making him play out of his comfort zone. Because I think if you go at LeBron, he's going to come back at you. And when you take that part of his game away, his passing and his cognitive reasoning of where should I go with the ball, he's not thinking as much. He's just – the best thing I saw last night that the Bulls did was make LeBron elbow Boozer
and
in
angry.
The chest
yeah.
in anger. You could tell that that was strictly out of frustration, and that's when you know you're in somebody's head. That's when you know that you've got somebody beat. And –
Well, I mean, Thibodeau's the best defensive coach in the league.
Thibodeau's great. So he processed that game plan and got that together specifically.
So is that the way to stop the Heat? Tackle them? Is that the game
well,
plan?
Well, that's not just it. I think you also have to rebound.
Yeah.
And we saw that was evident in the Bulls, physical play and rebounding.
Yeah.
And if you can out-rebound them, that's their weakness. I mean, let's face it, the Heat don't have a lot of weaknesses, and on the board's
yeah,
one of them.
Their weaknesses are that they don't have much size and that they're not very physical. I mean, LeBron's physical. I wouldn't want to go against him
in a
fight.
Oh, no. Right.
But everyone else in the Heat team is just finesse.
There are a lot of finesse players.
Yeah.
Shooters and finesse players.
Yeah.
LeBron is just such a good player that he can do so much that if you put shooters around him, you put people that can, you know, do a little bit around him.
Because you have to crash and help on – when LBJ is going to the rim, you have to scrunch down – and try to put two men on him.
Yeah.
And when that happens, all of a sudden Ray Allen's wide open in the corner.
Who I'm not impressed with at all this season is Dwayne Wade.
Okay.
I think Dwayne Wade has fallen to the depths of not being a premier player as far as him being able to go to another team and just take over. If I'm a GM, I really don't want Dwayne Wade. I'd take Chris Bosh over Dwayne Wade just because Wade's production's been down. Ever since he won the finals in 06 against the Mavericks, what has he really done himself?
Right.
He recruited LeBron and Chris Bosh, and now he has a superstar team. So I don't really see where Dwayne Wade's falling in all this. But as far as the streak, I'm more impressed by the Lakers streak, the 33, than I am by this team. Because LeBron talked about how they had ABA and NBA differences.
Mm-hmm.
But they also didn't have the Charlotte Bobcats and the Orlando Magic and these lower-tier teams to play against either.
Right.
The Lakers were playing against 16. There was only like 16 or 17 teams in the league at that point, and they're all having good talent. So you're not playing patty cake teams that you just go in and beat every time you play them.
And the Cavs didn't have Kyrie Irving or
it seemed like every team they play had players out. Boston had Rajon Rondo out.
Even, and Kevin Garnett.
Even when they got the streak snapped, Joakim Noah didn't play. Derrick Rose didn't play. Richard Hamilton didn't play. They basically had Luau Deng and Carlos Boozer.
And Taj Gibson.
Kirk Heinrich. These are not all-star caliber players, though, out there.
Do you think them losing is good for them, for their team?
I think it's great for them.
I think it's a great time for them
takes
to lose.
Takes that pressure off.
I think
before
it takes
the playoffs,
all the pressure off. I think if they were to go right up to the playoffs and lose.
They went out.
Now, I think the Heat may lose three or four games in a row now. Mm. I think they might be a little rattled.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
They might start another streak tomorrow.
They may honestly rest LeBron the rest of the season and just let
They basically
just coast
could.
In.
But I don't think that's good for them either, because I think if they take LeBron out the mix, everyone's, oh, no, what are we going to do? Because he's controlling so much right now that their game would change so much if he wasn't playing.
Right.
Like if LeBron was to get hurt even with an ankle injury, I mean, they would still be the number one seed. They're good enough to make it through the first round of the playoffs, probably, unless they match up with someone like Boston. But if LeBron was to get hurt right now, that's going to hurt them collectively as a team when he comes back, because they're going to learn to play a different way.
Right.
And that's the thing. Them coasting into the playoffs, another reason that might be a bad idea is, you're right, they could end up playing Boston in the first round. They could end up, if they don't play Boston, they're going to play Milwaukee, who's another good team. They'd probably beat Milwaukee even if they did rest.
But I think they'd have troubles with Boston, just the history between the two teams.
Boston's right there. They're not going to lay down over for the Heat. Heat would probably win the series, but, I mean, that would be a good one.
But as far as the impressiveness of the win streak, I want to see this Heat team in the next year or so they're together make an actual push in the total regular season. They've already lost 15 games, which if they, let's say they won out the rest of the season, that would tie as the sixth best season of all time, and that's not that great. Even the Mavericks did that in 07, and they lost in the first round.
Now, that wasn't
as good a team as Miami, but I want to see him do something like Jordan. I want to see him go 72-10 like the Bulls did in 95-96.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the 72-10 is more impressive
than any 27 game streak, even 33 or 34 in a row. You got to do that. I mean, that's every game you got to show
night
up
in
and
night out.
And they played tough opponents too when in Jordan's time. I don't think they had the same. They didn't have the lesser amount of teams as, say, Larry Bird did or Magic Johnson did in the 72 in the 70s. But
that was before teams. That was before when Jordan played. That was really before teams started piling superstars together like they are now.
That's true.
Because they pile superstars together now, you have teams that have no one.
But also, I think teams had a lot of superstars then too, because just not as many teams.
Yeah.
Imagine if you got rid of the Wizards, the Bobcats, Orlando,
Cleveland
and the Hornets. Those players are going somewhere. Mm-hmm. So Kyrie Irving would end up at the Mavericks and be playing with Dirk, or would end up in LA and be playing with Kobe.
And that's what I'm saying. I think Jordan's is more impressive because of that.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
I think there's more competition there.
Right. All right, well, let's talk about other notable streaks that we've had. Let's talk UCLA's 88 wins in a row, or UConn's women's team.
Was it UCLA?
Yeah, it was UCLA.
Okay, back. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
John Wooden.
Era.
And then UConn's women just, I think last year or 2 years ago, when they won 80 or 90 something in a row, like had the perfect season and had all of that go well for them. What do you think is the most impressive win streak overall? We could talk the Blackhawks. We could talk any of them. Who would you pick?
I think, 82 Dolphins? Or was it 72 Dolphins?
72, I think.
That won every game of the season in football. Football's a hard game to win. Because
you
got to prepare hard.
What about the Patriots, who actually had a win?
The Patriots,
games.
I think, won more games.
They won 16 straight games. Mm-hmm. 17.
I thought they won more.
18. They played in the Super Bowl and
they
lost.
They lost in the Super Bowl.
So they won 17 or 18 straight.
They won 18.
They won 17 straight.
17 straight.
Because they barely lost to the Giants with the
miracle catch.
Yes.
So I think that might be the most impressive.
That might be the most impressive. Because football's.
Because that's modern day football.
Every week, as hard as you can, every week. To make that happen. And in football, one thing goes wrong, you have one turnover, one interception, that can change the whole course of the game.
But it is run by them not winning the Super Bowl. But if we're talking regular season streaks, that's got to be up there.
But you know what's an impressive streak, and we talked about this before the show, that is just because the level of talent on the team was the Houston Rockets winning 22 in a row, which is the third best NBA winning streak, when they had Yao Ming and kind of a washed-up Tracy McGrady.
Yeah.
And that was the second best until this Heat
And that
streak.
Was the second best. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And people were wondering if the Heat were going to break that. Mm-hmm. And then we also had Denver this year. They went 15 in a row.
Yeah, 15 or 16.
15 in a row. And that
LA
was
got 20. LA got 20. The Clippers got 20 this year.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's been lots of good win streaks. And the Blackhawks was another one, too.
Yeah.
That was impressive, but just people don't pay as much
and
attention.
And then the Spurs... 10 wins in the regular season, and then carried it over 10 wins into the postseason, too. 20 straight wins last season. I mean, that was another...
So, Cooper, I heard you say L.A. won 20 straight. Are we getting to the point, and this is kind of off topic, but are we getting to the point to where the tides are turning a little bit and the new L.A. team is the Clippers instead of the Lakers? Are we there yet to where L.A. is now the Clippers?
I think...
Are we seeing that happen in front of our...
I honestly think that the Clippers would have to have another 10 consecutive years of beating the Lakers and being better than the Lakers.
Well, the Clippers need to make a Western Conference Finals, NBA Finals type thing. They just can't have good regular seasons and then flop.
Right. Honestly, like,
and the Lakers need to be bad during that same streak.
Because the reason that the Mavericks and Spurs, I think, have kind of a share of Texas is because they've both been successful.
Now, and they're not in the same arena.
They're not in the same arena. But, like, they kind of have a share of Texas because they've both been good. Now, while the Spurs
and
have
Texas
had more
Texas is so
finals,
huge.
Exactly. They're competing for one city. But also, you got to remember, the Lakers have fans nationally. Mm-hmm. It's just like the Celtics. There's fans nationally because of the history of the team. Yeah. And the Clippers don't have that because they haven't been there as long.
Yeah, just Clipper Darryl.
Just because they haven't won. They haven't won either. So,
I honestly think the Clippers would have to win 5 championships in the next 10 years for them to ever eclipse the Lakers, just because the Lakers have always been the LA team.
But you know it's always, what have you done for me lately? So if you see the Lakers, let's say the next 5 seasons, they don't make the playoffs, and the Clippers, let's say they don't win a championship, but they're there every year, Western Conference Finals maybe. I mean, they make runs every year. I think they maybe are the relevant team. I think people will start calling LA the Clippers.
It'd be...
I mean, that would be
world.
Absolutely incredible. But let's say Kobe retires, Dwight Howard leaves. Let's say they're not able to get one of those big free agents. What do the Lakers have in their future? They don't have a lot of great young players. Are they building on?
We saw it with the Celtics when they had just Paul Pierce for like 10 years. Mm-hmm. The Celtics didn't matter.
You can't
win
with just one player.
Yeah. Right.
But we're talking about winning streaks. I just pulled up a couple of very interesting ones. Carl Lewis won 4 consecutive men's long jumps in the Olympics.
Right.
So that's a streak over time.
Mm-hmm. Michael Phelps
won 300-meter butterflies. Mm-hmm.
And that's
over the course
of
16 years.
Carl
Lewis was a 16-year streak.
And really, probably
of being
a 20
the Olympic champion.
Probably a 20-year streak, because it was the next 4 years before he got lost.
So imagine starting if you started when you were 20 and being the champion until you're 36. Mm. That's a heck of a streak too. I know it's not done every day like the Lakers were, but that's a pretty impressive streak in itself.
To keep your body in that much.
Oh, at that age.
That peak of shape, to be the best in the world.
Playing against guys who are 26, 27,
at
the peak of their prime.
At the long jump is quite impressive. In Division II, Winona State University won 57 games.
Yeah. We also didn't talk about the old Oklahoma record of 47 straight wins in college football.
And that's really impressive.
I mean, that was way back in the day.
A hard place to do that.
Yeah. Even then, it's still hard to do. Do you think that baseball doesn't have the same kind of streaks because of changing in pitching?
Well, I mean, the Rangers had, 17, 18 straight just a few years? Like,
I think a baseball
ago.
One is very impressive, and I'm not the biggest fan of baseball, but it's impressive to me that you can have collectively a good enough team and good enough management.
Even your fifth starter can win you.
Even your fifth starter can win you games.
And that's what makes baseball so hard.
Yeah. All right.
Exactly.
Well, we have anything else to talk about on basketball, or do we want to move on to the next part of the NCAA controversial topic?
Mavs play tonight. Okay. They play against the Indiana Pacers.
That's
huge game. They've already, story came out, O.J. Mayo invited his barber to the game tonight.
Okay.
So the barber will be standing by. If they win, the Mavs will be shaving their beards off because they will officially be 500. Also, if they win, they'll be one game behind the Lakers, pending what the Lakers do tonight.
If the Lakers lose,
they'll be a half game behind the Lakers. And, I mean, it's unreal that they're this close, and I'd given up on them. Everybody had pretty much given up on them, and they've kind of proved us all wrong.
What do you think about Nowitzki's production thus far?
I think he's doing what he needs to do for the team to win. He realizes that game in and game out, he doesn't have to be...
He's definitely picked his scoring up.
I mean, last game, he scored 33. He was finally we talked last week about how, you know, he hadn't been the leading scorer in over a month. Well, you know, he scores 33 last night and kind of shuts us all up, but... I think he does what he has to do, and the team's figuring out. They're in a groove right now. They're figuring out what they need to do to win, and they're getting him the ball when he needs it.
All right. Well, that's about all we got on Mavericks. Let's very quickly talk the controversial topic, because we got to go to a commercial break pretty soon. So let's talk what's happening in the NCAA tournament. We've seen not the best games because, I mean, great endings, but not the best
overall great coach. You're seeing a lot of great finishes, but the games are just kind of boring.
I agree with this as someone who plays with a shot clock now. Mm-hmm. In high school, I played a real slow tempo type game.
Yeah.
So I never thought about shot clock till I got to college. And then when you get there, you like it. because the talent level is so good that people could hold the ball for a whole half if they wanted to. Mm-hmm. The shot clock adds such a dynamic that I think it should be added to like high school basketball. And even I was watching intramurals the other day, and I'm thinking in my head, where's the shot clock? Like, why are they holding the ball? And then I realized there is no shot clock. Mm-hmm. So I think you'll even see the shot clock implemented in high school eventually, mm-hmm. about 35 or something. But the college, it's too high. If college women can have it at 30,
they don't have it.
They don't have it a backcourt violation.
Yeah.
Or they have a backcourt violation, excuse me. They don't have a 10-second violation.
Right.
Like men do. But 35 seconds, that's enough time. There should be about a 30. I think it should be 30. I don't think it should be the level 24. Of the league where you get down the court and there's 18 seconds left. You run a set for someone to get a shot. Mm-hmm. We don't want college to turn into the NBA, but there's a big difference in those 6 seconds, too, from 24 to 30.
Yeah.
There's a big difference in the 5 seconds from 30 to 35.
Right.
So I think limiting it to about 30, you're going to get a faster-paced game. You're not going to get the slow sets where they run through. Okay. We didn't get a shot on that one. Let's run through it again.
Try another set. Yeah.
Exactly.
And that's the problem. The scores right now, some of these games have been like 57 to 49 or 58 right. to 52. And that's not halftime. That's the ending of the game. That is an incredibly boring, slow-paced game.
And that's also just two 20-minute halves. It's no four quarters either.
Oh, yes,
they originally implemented the shot clock because the game had gotten boring and it was the scoring was down.
Because you could take forever. I mean,
right.
literally,
and
they could hold the ball a whole half.
This season, scoring has been its lowest since they implemented the shot clock.
Yeah.
So, obviously, it's time to lower it again.
I really do think it's coming, honestly.
It has to.
I really think it's going to be lowered to 30 because there's even not NCAA talking necessarily, but just player talking all the time about do you think they're going to lower the shot clock?
Yeah.
And we haven't seen a major rule change in basketball since the three-point line has been expanded to now the college, which is a foot longer than the high school.
Yeah.
But it's going to make a difference in the game when they do. They're going to have to implement it just like they did the three-point line because mm-hmm. you look and you say, oh, that's a foot. That's a foot. What's that foot? Well, that foot adds a lot of more distance and getting used to the same
motion
that mm-hmm. you're used to shooting threes in high school. Mm-hmm. And that 5 seconds is going to change a lot for the players that have been doing with a 35-second shot clock because those seniors that have been doing it for even 5 years if they redshirted, have it built in their brains that, okay, I know how much time a possession takes. It's just kind of a natural flow.
Yeah.
If you asked NBA players, they would be able to tell you how it feels with the 24-second shot clock,
right.
how quick. And
I think we're seeing a lot of lesser teams that aren't as good, being able to compete with bigger teams because of the shot clock. They're able to stick in games because they can just play slow ball.
They can play slow ball, but they can also get good shots. They can be like...
Right. Well, in that case, do you want the shot clock lowered? Because
yes.
I love seeing underdogs win.
Yeah, like that's fun, like, theoretically. Sorry, I can't talk.
It'd be dangerous.
Theoretically. But when you're actually watching the game, it's just not fun to watch. I mean, yeah, it's cool to be like, oh, yeah, the underdog won this week. Oh, yeah, they...
But we see with, like...
They won.
Some of the upsets this year have been the fast-paced teams that have beaten those.
Florida Gulf Coast.
Right.
And Wichita State, the same thing. Those or LaSalle. Any of those upset teams really
I just want to watch good quality basketball that's entertaining. I don't,
of course.
I just think the best coaches, some of the best coaches in the ones that have been productive for so many years, they take advantage of the fast break when they can and they slow it down when they can't.
Right.
You'll see that with Nowitzki. You'll see that with Izzo. And I think it's going to change a little bit of their game, too, when they change if they change it. Or I think it's more of a when they change it type
right.
thing.
When they will change it.
I don't think
it
is a when if they change
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I definitely think they will change it. But they need to do something. And
oh, I agree. It should be 30. That's just my consensus on it.
Right.
All right. Well, let's go to a quick commercial break. We'll be right back. We're going to talk odds to win it all for the Cowboys. All right. This is KETR's Locker Room.
Know someone who has a car they no longer need? Maybe a student who's graduating college, an elderly relative who no longer drives, or a neighbor with a car that won't run? Do them and your station a favor by telling them about the KETR Car Donation Program. We'll come pick it up and give them a tax receipt, and you'll both be helping your station continue to provide quality programming for the community. It's easy to do. Just remember the phone number, 855-KETR-123, and share it with others.
Hi, I'm Mike Cuthbert, host of Primetime Radio. This week, we hear about the five languages of appreciation that work best in the workplace to say what you mean. And a career counselor takes us through the steps necessary to find that transitional career that will keep us working happily until we retire. That's all this week on Primetime Radio.
Friday afternoon at 3 on your station, 88.9 KETR.
This is KETR's Locker Room. I'm your host, Taylor Phelps, with my co-hosts Ryan Billups and Cooper Welch. The Las Vegas Hotel has recently come out with the odds to win the Super Bowl, with the Patriots at a 6-1 and the 49ers at 7-1, Broncos at 8-1. Those are your top three. Billups, what do you think about these selections?
You know, I think that's probably pretty close. Notice you don't see Baltimore in there.
I think the Broncos would be a little higher.
Well, you would think that, but you look at the Patriots and 49ers, and they have that.
They just have the most stacked teams.
Yeah.
I mean, just that trade for Anquan Boldin for a draft pick.
Yeah. That's
insane.
It's kind of funny. You see the Ravens down here at 14-1, your past Super Bowl winner, so obviously they don't see the Ravens.
But it's not like those top three are much different either. A 6-1, 7-1, or 8-1. They've all kind of been like, well, any of them could really make it.
What's really interesting is they have the Cowboys about kind of not middle of the pack, actually a little closer than that.
I really think it's sad though that they're after
30-1.
The Bengals. Well, the Bengals are 30-1, and Bears are 30-1, and Redskins are 30-1. But they're after I guess the teams above them, but like the Steelers at 14-1,
the Ravens at 14-1, the Falcons,
the Seahawks at 12-1. Like those are good teams. I
think the Cowboys at 30-1 is almost generous.
I think them being just...
But I don't think they're in the same class as the Bengals either.
Right. But I think them being just 10-1 odds over the Lions is sad. I think that shows you the state of the Cowboys right now, that the Lions are at 40-1 odds to win the Super Bowl, and the Cowboys are at 30-1. You know you're not having a good year when you're 10 points over the Detroit Lions of all teams.
But honestly, I might be a little bit of a Cowboys homer here, but we were not that far away last year. If we would have had a little bit of offensive line, if we would have had a little bit of offensive line and had a little bit of defensive pressure, I think our team could have been really. I think we were on the edge of being a really good team. And so maybe, you know, I don't know if this draft will be able to get us anything that can help us immediately. But if we're able to get some help on the offensive line, which I think anything different would be better. At this point, then I don't think those odds are that off. I think we could even push up a little bit.
Well, let's talk draft. Todd McShay just released his fourth mock draft on ESPN Insider. If you have an Insider account, you can see it. If not, well, anyway, Vaccaro is who Todd McShay is saying the Cowboys are going to draft in the 18th spot in the first round right now. Kenny Vaccaro is a safety played for UT. He's 21. He's 6 feet tall, so that's a little bit short for a safety, I think. And his weight is 214. He ran a 4.63 in the 40.
They're saying that's about his only weakness, though. They're saying that 40 time is really one of his only weaknesses in his game, and that is very slow. You saw Manti Te'o run a 4.71, and
he's
slow.
A linebacker.
He's a linebacker, and he was a slow linebacker, so... For him to run a 4.63, that's pretty slow. But
to be honest, though, I'm not real big on 40 times.
Combine doesn't do much for me, especially for safety. How often are safeties just fully? I mean, obviously you have the deep throws; they're running full speed. But a lot of times it's change of direction, and that's where
it's change of direction. And it's also like the initial. I mean, it is the initial quick burst. But who runs 40 yards to go chase someone down and tackle them? That's going to happen hardly ever.
Right.
And you already have cornerbacks that can do that.
Because
you don't
the safety
need every
already
on the
has
four,
a 15-20 yard advantage over the receiver.
Yeah.
So as long as he's staying, you know, where he needs to be,
it's,
he's
it's
not
a lot of
get...
using what's in your head more than using just your athletic ability. You got to have the athletic ability, but to just go to say I'm not going to draft Manti Te'o because he runs a 4.7 when plenty of other successful linebackers have run just around
there. Yeah, look at Terrell Suggs. He ran like a...
Oh, it was like a 4.8, 4.9 or something. It wasn't good.
Horrible.
But, I mean, that split, that tenth of a second, what is that really doing in the game of football?
So, do y'all like it? Do you like the Cowboys taking a safety with 18th instead of, you know, a lot of people want a offensive lineman or...
Right.
The trick in the draft is like to take the best player at your spot that you can get.
Right. Yeah. So if there's an offensive lineman or, there who's rated above him, that's who you take.
Or to trade your spot to get the player you want so you can maybe get more picks. Because maybe the Cowboys will say, okay, you really want this guy? Well, if we don't take him here,
give us two
he'll
picks.
Go next. We'll give us two picks a little later on and we can get the two offensive linemen we want. Mm-hmm. So the draft is... People think the draft's so simple and they boo at the picks, but there's a lot more going on behind closed doors when they're like, this is a very important pick for our franchise. We need to make the decision of what we need, but also the talent of player we're getting, because it doesn't do any good to get 50 sixth-round picks and none of them ever play.
Right, and you saw the Cowboys do that a few years back where they traded all their
top round picks.
Even have a pick until the third or fourth round.
Yeah. So it's that debate
they
against,
all busted. I mean,
it's that debate on who should I take at the spot I have. Do I take the best talent or do I take what I need?
And that's what makes or breaks a GM's career too.
Oh yeah, it's how good they are.
I think you take the best talent that fits what you need.
It's how well can you decipher that decision? It's how well can you say these two guys are good. It's basically talent evaluations, all it is.
And the Cowboys haven't necessarily been great at that. They've had obviously
because
some good
Jerry Jones is the one making the decisions.
Yeah,
and they've
and
had
he
doesn't
some good
have the
picks,
time.
But they've also had some.
I mean, but there's some easy picks. Dez Bryant's an easy pick.
Right.
But it's when it comes to offensive linemen and the later picks that make you a good GM, like drafting Tom Brady makes you a good GM.
Right.
When you can evaluate talent late.
Signing Tony Romo, not drafted. That was a good pickup.
Yeah.
And that was thanks to Bill Parcells, of course.
Right. Bill Parcells had some good drafts, too, I think. I mean, he's the one that got us DeMarcus Ware.
Yeah,
so.
He got us a lot of good players. And you see that now that he's gone, you see his legacy still
there.
He had
built that team up. Mm-hmm. So.
And it's putting the right players, like you said. It's not always drafting the best player. It's
drafting the right player.
It's like mixing that pick to where you draft the right players at the right spots.
Yeah. Well, let's talk. If they take Kenny Vaccaro in the first round, who are they going to take in the second round?
Well, if they take a safety at the first pick, they have to find an offensive lineman.
Okay.
And there's no way around that. They wouldn't. I mean, their needs right now, their two biggest needs are offensive lineman and safety.
Right.
If they don't get, so basically whichever one they take first, they're taking the other one. Well, I mean, not necessarily. If they're taking a safety in the first two rounds, they got to get an offensive lineman in there too. As far as who they'll take, there's been talk of Kyle Long. He's a guard out of Oregon.
Okay.
But when you get to the second round, like it's hard to predict anything past the first round. Even
the
first round,
Oregon linemen to me are that they're built for speed. They're built for a speed game, and we don't really have as much of that.
You want durability and strength.
I want some huge bodies like
he is a big body.
Lane Johnson out of Oklahoma is also a projected pick, and he's just a big guy.
Right.
And that's kind of, I think, what we need to look for.
But when you get to the second round, it's so hard to because there's going to be so many teams trading picks and moving up and down at that point that it's just so hard to pin a player down and know where he's going to be drafted.
Exactly. That's why you got to make split decisions.
Well, let's just talk really quick about Kyle Long, what his draft stock is. He is 6'6", 313 pounds. He is got a 34 1/4 inch arm length.
And that's a guard. That's a tackle size guard.
Yeah, and he's got a 11-inch hand span, so that's huge hands, too.
Is he also a quick guy?
I bet he's quick.
His 40-yard dash is a 5.09, which is fast for someone that's 300 pounds.
Pretty fast for a 300-pounder.
And let's talk his legacy,
about what
too.
I run.
His legacy is his brother, Chris Long, plays for the Rams right now, and his dad is Howie Long.
And I always love it when you have the NFL players' sons. I mean, you know they grow up
definitely
just
the
and
legacy.
They have a
good
influence
in
on them. You know they're probably not going to be troublemakers. Right. And
all right, well let's end the show there this week. I think that's a good stopping point. You've been listening to KETR's Locker Room. I'm Cooper Welch, Taylor Phelps, Ryan Billups. Say goodbye, guys.
See you next week.
Next week.
All right. We'll be back Tuesday at 2. Thank you so much for listening to this special Thursday edition. We'll be back on Tuesday. This is KETR's Locker Room.